The reading today is Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24, and that's on page 811 of the Church Bibles. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth or rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money.
Thank you, Beth. As Anya said, my name's Kev. I'm the minister. Really good to have you with us this afternoon. Up at the top of planet Earth, around the Arctic Circle, the woolly bear caterpillar is the first insect to appear each spring. You know caterpillars. If you've read The Very Hungry Caterpillar, you understand the basics. They eat like crazy till eventually they go into a cocoon from where they emerge as a butterfly. Problem for woolly bear caterpillars is they live in the Arctic Circle. Spring is short, and they're the first ones out the blocks as soon as there's a thaw. They eat, chomp, 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 but they don't get enough reserves in from one season of chowing down to transform into the butterfly before winter sets in. So they go back into hibernation, and the woolly bear caterpillar, it completely freezes its guts, its blood, entire hairy little body frozen till the next spring, when woolly bear caterpillar unthaws again, scurries out, eat, chomp, 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 still not enough reserve to transform, cold closes in, and the cycle repeats again and again and again for 14 years. 14 years, the woolly bear caterpillar is the longest living caterpillar in the world. 14 years of eating and freezing and thawing and eating again, till eventually in the 14th year, the caterpillar has fed enough to finally weave their cocoon and emerges gloriously as this. All that energy and work has been worth it. Now it can fly for 3 days and then it dies. 14 years of chomp, 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 thinking it can finally relax and enjoy life, dead within 72 hours. And actually, it can't even relax and enjoy those 3 days, because in those 3 days, it has to find a mate. 3 days to go on your first date, find a life partner and conceive a child, no pressure. Frozen Planet, BBC iPlayer, if you want to look at it yourself. Beware of the butterfly's mating scene. I would fast forward that, to be honest. And maybe that story doesn't move you. Perhaps you even celebrate the evolutionary cycle. I found it genuinely sad when I watched it, because woolly bear caterpillar is a fighter and he's cute, and all this eating and freezing and thawing, for what? Well, that's a story of the kingdom of this earth. It's the game our world screams at you and me to play. Store, gather, money, stuff, chomp, 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 chomp. My dad was in business. His was a world of self-made businessmen. Most of them had left school by the age of 16 at the latest. One of his business friends was called Bob. And when he would see Bob, my dad would ask him, "How's business going for you, Bob?" At which point, Bob would produce from his back pocket this massive thick wedge of 50-pound notes. And he'd wave them around and say, "Well, business can't be going too badly, can it?" He was from East London. Was that an East London accent? Sorry if you're from East London. But again, it's the game we're supposed to all be playing. Life feels good when I've got enough cash. The ones who have the most are the winners. Keep chomping away, and maybe in 14 years or 40 years, you'll have stored up enough. Jesus wants to guard his disciples from this mindset. It's a tiny tragedy with a woolly bear caterpillar. Proper tragedy when it's proper, precious human beings busting their short lives, all this eat, in vain. We're working through Matthew's gospel. Matthew and the other apostles were commissioned to go and make disciples of all nations, said Jesus. Teach them to obey everything I've commanded you. here in the famous Sermon on the Mount, we are being discipled, mentored directly from the lips of the great teacher himself. And he's trying to expand our horizons beyond what people think of us now. That was last week. Beyond what we can gain for ourselves now. That's today. Jesus wants to talk to us about pleasing a Father in heaven and storing up treasure in his kingdom that will never fade. Are you laying up treasure on earth or in heaven? Do you serve God or money? And we want to put up our hand and say, hey, Jesus, we're modern people. We've learned to multitask. We can serve God and stuff. To which he says, you're kidding yourself. If you think you can serve both, you're in danger of a story as tragic as the woolly bear caterpillars. Jesus is bold here. He's blunt. And he's binary. I wonder if we will be persuaded to give our all to a very different and so much better story. First, then, where are you investing yourself? Verse 19. Don't lay up treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourself treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves don't break in and steal. Today's whole passage works with pairs of contrasts at every point. But notice, this is not a contrast between people who want to work and those who don't. The laying up is the chomp, chomp, chomp busy person language. It's both in 19 and in verse 20. Nor is this a contrast between people who want to store up treasures and people who don't. That's in both verses too. And it's not even a contrast of people who want to store up treasures for themselves and those who don't. Yourself, verse 19. Yourself, verse 20. So no need for the natural capitalists among us to feel uncomfortable. Jesus, our financial advisor, is not recommending we be less hard-headed, go all soft and otherworldly. This is an appeal to be even shrewder in our investment portfolio. Apparently back then they used to keep their treasure in the form of expensive clothing stored inside metal containers, to which we might think, well done us for moving on from that precarious system of wealth management. Really? Well done us? With our markets that crash, inflation that destroys us disposable income, identity theft, a constant worry. You know, I got an email from the Church of England this week asking me for my bank details. No way. I mean, even, I don't know. I think it might be a scam. Even if it's not a scam, there's no way I'm giving the Church of England my bank details. Can I trust anyone who I speak to on the phone who says they're from my bank? Can I trust any website that's trying to get me to click on and give them my cash? And even if you don't manage to destroy all your reserves, you'll be destroyed before you're able to enjoy them. Like the woolly bear caterpillar. Like Matthew Perry. Friends was the greatest show on earth back in the day. By the end of it, he was earning $1 million per episode. This was 20 years ago when $1 million was actually a decent amount of money. Hot tub in his garden. They found him dead last week in the hot tub. My dad's mate, Bob, with the £50 notes, he died last week as well, actually. That's the reason I remembered about him. I don't know if they buried Bob with some of those £50 notes still in his back pocket. If you've got no money or you're a student, don't be smug. This is still about you. A warning to you. We're all lured into this game. Anxious choices to study and work and save and store and plan. Chomp, 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 chomp. For treasure that's highly vulnerable and simply doesn't last. Jesus says, stop it, guys. He's not being stingy. He just thinks we've listened to bad brokers giving dubious advice. Jesus hates it when eternities are ruined. And he begs us to invest in things that will last. But what does that mean in practice? I've been wondering that myself. You know, some people say the Sermon on the Mount sounds lovely, but all a bit vague in the detail. Great, lay up treasure in heaven. What does it actually mean to lay it up? Well, I think Jesus has already said a lot that helps us in the detail. If you want the principles, the Lord's Prayer from last week gives us the principles. Right in the middle of that, he knows you need your daily bread. Ask him for it. Work for it. But if that's mentioned there in some sort of proportion to what else is ultimately important, there's clearly a lot more in life. Invest in your relationship with our Father in heaven. Do things that hallow his name and advance his kingdom in the lives of the people of the world. Prioritize sin forgiveness, it looks like, and sin avoidance. If you want it even more practical, again, we know from the Sermon on the Mount what Jesus rewards. Being publicly connected to him despite the cost to reputation. 5 verse 10. He rewards enduring persecution. Love for enemies. Giving. Prayer, your Father in heaven. Remember last week? He sees in secret and will reward you. Take it, all of those things must be part of what laying it up means. Are you giving your all to stuff of fading significance? Or are you laying up treasure in heaven that will never fade? Verse 21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. In other words, what you treasure, what you're investing in, tells the rest of us about your heart. So where is your heart? And I think that connects to the second point. What you love is connected to what you think looks lovely. Verse 22. The eye of the lamp is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Sounds a bit complicated at first, that, doesn't it? I think the big thing is your eye lights the way for your body, basically. A healthy eye brings light. With eyes that don't work properly, well, the thing that's meant to be the light in you actually plunges you into darkness. Light and darkness have already had a spiritual connotation in Matthew. The people dwelling in the darkness have seen a great light. Jesus shining in a dark world. Take it, if the healthy eye is going to enlighten, it must be one that fixes on him and his kingdom. The bad eye clouds over, as it were, the more it focuses on something else. Spend your time staring at money and stuff. You'll go blind to ultimate realities. And isn't it just hard not to fixate on the stuff of this world? Well, fixate on something better. The word for healthy eye can be translated single, not endlessly distracted. It's focused on what matters. Treasure in heaven. What is this treasure in heaven? We talked about what laying it up might mean. What's the treasure in heaven in practice? Helpful if we know what our eyes are meant to be looking at, so we know what our hearts are meant to treasure. Again, the Sermon on the Mount tells us, go back to the very beginning and read that list of the blesseds and then what it says about the kingdom of heaven. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. They shall be comforted in that place. It's about inheriting the earth. It's not floaty, it's tangible and a new creation. Next slide. It's a place where you'll be satisfied if you want a world of righteousness. You receive mercy, you shall see God. Treasure in heaven will be about being called the sons of God. I wonder, when did I last spend 5 minutes even fixating my mind on what one of those would be like? 7 of them, that's one each day. Spend a bit of time on one each day. On what it means to think you're going to see God. Compared to the amount of time spent checking your shares if you have them, or planning my next holiday, or reading the property section of the Sunday Times. What have you got your eyes on? Have better eyesight will help you keep laying up the right kind of treasure. And keep asking yourself the binary question, finally, point 3, who's your boss? Verse 24, No one can serve two masters, for either he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You can't serve God and money. Two bosses you can work for, but you can really only work for one in the end. Money there is mammon. It's a broader word that encapsulates worldly stuff. Most of us don't fixate on money for its own sake. It's the stuff, it's the experiences, the travel that it brings us into. When Jesus says you can't serve God and money, he's talking to disciples. People who aren't bothered about God don't have the dilemma. They're fully focused on working for the stuff. It's the religious who need to be told you can't serve both. Because it's the religious who'll be in danger of trying to. And at first, this might seem like a big jump from where we were last week. We were thinking about how we might parade our spirituality in front of others. Same underlying issue. Are we earth and rewards now focused or future and father focused? Many of you probably do have two bosses or three. If you work for the same organization, in theory, there's no conflict of loyalties. In theory, this is a proper conflict of interest. Back then, if you were a servant, you owed total allegiance to the family you served. And maybe an analogy would be in football. Sorry to mention it, because I know it's not everybody's thing. There's this very annoying trend in modern football. I don't know if you've noticed it. Half and half scarves. I mean, look at that. How can that be? Well, hey, United and City. If you're looking at that thinking, oh, that's nice. You don't have the first clue about football, I'm afraid. I'm sorry. It's tribal. It's binary. You can only be one or the other. Certainly, if you're a player. I play for City, but I love my United scarf. Still train with them sometimes. What? If football doesn't work for you, two boyfriends or girlfriends, I love them both. Really? Every time your love or devotion flows in one direction, you're ruining your relationship with the other. We say, hey, not bad in and of itself, though, Jesus. It's the love of money that's the problem. He says, yeah, that's what I'm on about. Your heart. Such a danger for the religious to be complacent in this area. God on Sunday, God with my lips, cash donation on the way out for God. Rest of the week, in bed the whole time with materialism. Nothing I wouldn't do for it. If you find your love and devotion to money and stuff is increasing, please don't be naive about what that means about your relationship with God. You're kidding yourself if you think you can devote yourself to both. Eat, 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 chomp, 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 chomp. Laying up treasure on earth. Bigger and bigger, it starts to master me, my sights, and the kingdom of heaven stuff gets smaller and smaller. I wonder if here in the middle of one of the wealthiest cities this planet has ever known, this could be a word from the Lord. So convicting to me personally. How poor have I been at eyeing up treasure in heaven? How thankful I am for Jesus, his example before the devil. Remember, worship God only, serve him alone. How I hunger to be more like him. Because money is a terrible boss. It doesn't love you. It will consume you. It will give you toys to play with for a short time. And then master money will leave your eternal soul high and dry. I mean, the thought of parading round heaven or hell, telling everyone how many zeros you had on your account during this short life, it's a joke. Except for many, it won't be a joke. It will be a nightmare. You have a Father in heaven. He's so much better to work for. One day you will see him as his child, and from him you will inherit an earth of only righteousness and good. I know it's complicated. We need jobs. Anxieties in this area are high. More on that next week. Money does make the world go round to some extent. But Jesus says, decide right now to wake up every morning resolved to serving him, and with eyes fixed on the future that he has promised. And resolved to do that in your heart and in your eyes, go out and act accordingly. Organize the diary around your relationship with your father. Shine for him, even if it does cost in your career. I wonder, does your boss at work know that they're not the ultimate boss you serve? Give the job up and train for gospel ministry if you have the gifts. Don't let master money hold you back from that. I was just reflecting, some of you are a wonderful example to me in trying to live this way. Thank you. But it's a constant personal audit. If you got hauled into court and accused of serving God rather than money, would the use of your time, energy, ambitions demonstrate enough evidence to convict you? We're supposed to shine in this way. There's meant to be a difference. We had our giving update from Kelvin. This passage is not mainly a fundraising drive by Jesus, but giving to the needs of gospel ministry is an investment in the kingdom of heaven. And you know, giving money to gospel work in that way is actually a really good way of teaching your bank balance a lesson about who's really boss and who you really serve. Shall we pray?
Our Father in heaven, you declare your almighty power in showing us mercy at the cross. Mercifully grant to us such a measure of your grace that we may be made partakers in your heavenly treasure through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.